We're in. Elliot Greer in the studio. Dude, I was saying, I loved your performance that you gave. When was this? You were on the Tonight Show. How long ago? Like a couple months ago?
In December. It's funny. That was right before things that really kicked off.
For you. Yeah, yeah.
For myself. I got that gig through a friend of mine who I was I've been playing in the city a lot. Just like either cover gigs to like my own stuff to like just the bartender to busking in Central Park. Like I feel like I've done it all. And my friend was like, do you want to do this gig? I can't do it. But he didn't really tell me much about it. And I was like, yeah, sure. It paid quite well. It was right before Christmas. Yeah, it was like, okay, this will be a nice little...
What does it pay? Like, give me a ballpark. What do you get paid to... You sang with Ashley McBride, John Osborne on The Tonight Show.
Yeah.
There were sort of like church pews, and there were three of you guys in the back that were singing like this almost like tribal, like chanting kind of sound thing. It was really great.
Yeah.
Ballpark me.
It was just under a grand.
Just under a grand, but probably not that much work, right?
I'll be honest with you. It was the easiest song I've ever had to learn.
Yeah.
It was just the verse, and the only words that were in it were hallelujah, hallelujah. Jesus loves the drunkards, the whores, and the queers. Hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. Would you recognize him if he bought you a beer? That's literally it.
That was it.
So that I was
all right, put me in.
Like, put me in.
I could do it. Yeah. So your friend, they asked your friend to do it, and your friend was like, I can't do this.
Yeah, I don't know why.
I have a conflict.
Yeah, I don't know what was going on. He's a session singer as well. And I hadn't done a lot of session singing, to be completely honest with you. But it got to the point where I was just like, this is great. It's a great opportunity, like all that kind of stuff. So did the gig, met Ashley and John, who are like really nice, just genuine people.
Yeah.
And it was fun. And then right after that, like, I think, I don't know exactly, I think that was like December 10th, like less than a week later, that's when things started to go nuts. So it felt, that was a really defining moment for me. That it felt like that was just like on the back.
Like that could be one of those moments where you're like, I made it, I'm on The Tonight Show. And then like weeks go by and like ends up like it doesn't do anything for you.
Oh yeah.
Or like nothing happened.
Oh yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah,
but
yeah,
like that
yeah.
was like, you got like on a roll there.
Yeah.
Like you had some momentum. And nothing
came directly from
that performance.
It was like a domino effect of like, I felt like I was having these conversations. I feel like every creative person or anyone who's ambitious will know what I'm talking about. Like, I would go into those situations going, this could be the break.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I feel like you could go into The Tonight Show being like, this could be This is it.
You never know who you're going to meet.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not a schmoozy type of guy. I'm the guy who, like, when they were all, like, doing their thing, I was just in my dressing room just, like, doing my
what
own thing.
Like, what are they doing? Like sound?
They were like
hanging out,
singing
like...
and like sort of jamming in their dressing room.
Yeah,
and a
yeah.
few of the other people went to join them. I kind of was like, I don't want to be the guy. I don't know these people. I'm trying. There was a code of etiquette that I was kind of like, these are the artists. Like, I'm really sort of, I just didn't want to be the guy being like, and then they're like, who's this guy? Just trying to get a leg in. So
yeah.
I sort of stayed back for whatever reason, but then they kind of came to me and then they were like, oh, I love your voice and all that, and like, I feel like I should know you. And then Ashley followed me on Instagram. She was like, I just know I'm going to run into you again, which I was like, that's really sweet. And then again was like, oh my goodness, like maybe that could like lead to something. It never did. And then, but then 10 days later, this whole thing kicked off.
Do you rehearse for that? Or how does that work? Like, do you have a rehearsal offsite and then you just do it there?
We did it once because it was so easy. They just gave us in-ears. They were just to test the sound. We played through it, made sure we were fine. And that was it, you know. It was the easiest paycheck for performing I've ever done.
Yeah.
Which is great.
So then what happened? Was this like around the time? See, I feel like it's interesting because we're sort of in this time musically where like you have to be an artist and you have to be a content creator and balance those two.
Yeah.
But you're someone who's like actually had some pretty big success on social media, but I feel like you haven't really compromised your songwriting or the content that you're putting out. Like all the content of yours that's gone viral has basically just been because of your music and your playing, right? Like you haven't, at least that I was seeing, like you weren't pulling any massive stunts or anything.
No. I'll be honest with you. I've had a strange relationship with social media. Like I've always, before I had a following to a certain degree, I secretly always wanted the following. I feel like anyone who tells you that they don't, I mean, I'm not saying people are chasing numbers, but I do think it's like anyone who's a creative person wants not so much just people eyes on you, but they just want, I wanted eyes on my music. So I kind of felt like for a long time I was putting out content and I was like busting my ass in the studio, like trying to make this work. And then you put it out and like four people would respond.
Like just music, like just releasing songs,
just
or
releasing
like video content?
Maybe a bit of both.
Yeah.
But it was my girlfriend that said to me, you need to get on TikTok. And I was very against it. I was like, because at the time I was like, I'm not the type of guy that people are going to buy into on TikTok. I'm not very good at the trends. And like, I feel like a fucking moron trying to do stupid things. So I was like, you're going to look at it and just cringe if I was to do something like that. And then she was like, she works in advertising. She's like, people just go to TikTok for like their subgenre niche things. You just need to find a market that people come to TikTok to see you.
That's all. Don't worry about everyone else. Just find the people who are going to be into you.
Yeah, which is, I suppose, is a great lesson for any artist. But I feel like, at least for myself, it's like it sometimes takes me a long time for the penny to drop. So I was kind of like, oh, I don't know. So I was putting up videos. Nothing was sticking. And I was like, oh, this is not it. This is not great. I had one video that I put up, which was my first kind of, it wasn't viral, but it got like, I remember it got like 10,000 views, which for me, I was like, wow, that's quite a lot. Like I've only had like 300 views, or I was at 10,000 views. And then Noah Khan commented on it. And I was like, oh, this is quite cool. And then Jelly Roll, the country artist, he messaged me and he was like, you're an amazing songwriter. And I was like, okay, so there's a little bit of traction coming here.
What was that for? Bleed or what song?
No,
was
that song was All My Exes Are Doing Better Than Me.
Oh yeah, it's a great song.
I appreciate that. So that was a year ago, and that kind of spurred me on. And then, long story short, I broke my collarbone. It was a few different things that happened. I broke my collarbone on a way to a gig, and then I was in the hospital. I played the gig.
Yeah, I heard this.
So I was that determined.
Do you know it was broken though when you played the gig?
I did.
See, I'm just not that committed at anything. I had to use my arm to. I'd be thinking about like long term damage. Like, what's this one gig compared to like
that? Well, that's a sensible thing to do. And I wasn't being reckless. Like, I did seek like top medical professional advice, and I said, like, is me doing this gonna screw me up? Because I'm not that much of an idiot that I would blow the red.
If they greenlit you or whatever, then I'd be like, yeah, let's else am I gonna do?
They kind of were like, we don't recommend it, but if you can figure out a way to keep your arm in this position, you can do it. So I kind of came up with the idea that I held the guitar up this way, I looked like a real moron, and played the whole show like this, already caused people to go like, is there something wrong with this guy?
Or probably. But how'd you break your arm?
I was scooting. I was on like an electric scooter.
Yeah, like one of the ones you pick up off the street or like.
Well, actually it was my one.
It was your own scooter.
I was the idiot for buying it. I spent like maybe like $1,000 on that. It goes like 30 miles an hour. I wasn't wearing a helmet or any like protective gear.
But you looked great.
I was looking quite good.
You were
good.
Looking really
I was
cool.
looking like the baby version of Sons of Anarchy.
Oh yeah.
I had the leather jacket on, but I was I wasn't driving a Harley. It was more of a smaller thing. So I was doing that, and then this guy jumps out right in the middle of the bike lane. Like just jumps. I don't know if he was okay, but I don't think he was trying to do it maliciously. I think he just like was trying to get out. There was scaffolding, and then I swerved, and then I just like hit the deck, and like I landed. I thought I dislocated it first, but I was so stunned by the whole thing, and I was literally on a freeway. I was in Queens, so I was literally like, I was very lucky that there wasn't like a semi or whatever that would like come and crush me. So I like crawl over, and the guy didn't even stop. And then
crazy.
And then this family came over, and I'm like, you know, swearing like a sailor. And there's like two little fuck. But I was like, fuck. And then I was like, I'm so sorry. Like, I was trying to be in that moment. I was still
courteous.
And this guy was like, do you want a water? And I was like, yeah, I'll take some water. And then the guy said to the guy walking away, you almost killed this guy. And he was like, yeah, sorry, man, better luck next time. And I was like,
wait, the guy was walking away?
Yeah.
Or
yeah, the guy who jumped out just kept walking. And then the guy who helped me, who was a random bystander.
Wait, he walked? I thought this person was in a car. They were just walking?
Oh, they just walked.
Oh, and they cut you off because they sort of walked in front of you.
Yeah, so it was coming down.
And then he just walked away?
He didn't even stop.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It was the strangest thing. I was so stunned in the moment, and I was so lucky that I actually hit my head slightly. So my first thought was like, fuck this guy. If I have a concussion, I have a major problem on my hands, because my phone was on like 10%. I was deep into Queens, and I couldn't get myself home. So I was like literally calling my girlfriend. I was like, we have a pretty bad issue here. I said, I think I've dislocated my shoulder. I might pass out in a second. Just go and find my friends and try and find me. And she was like, I don't have Find My Friends on. Just she had disassociated.
She goes, you forgot you don't have any friends. No, I'm kidding.
True.
He must be concussed.
So anyway, I'm thankfully not concussed. I get into a taxi and then I drive straight to the hospital, and I'm saying to my girlfriend, let's just not go to the hospital, because at the time I didn't have insurance, because I thought, oh no, this is going to be like, I mean, I was just like a struggling musician. I was like, I don't have $600 to spend on insurance. And so I was literally YouTubing how to pop a dislocated shoulder.
God.
And I said to my girlfriend, I was like, just pop it in, it's fine. And she was like, we can't do that. Like, there's no way. And I was like, I don't want to go and spend like $10,000 for them to be like, hey, it's broken, we can't do anything for it. Anyway, she talked me into it. We went, and thank God I didn't, because they were like, if you'd have done that, they were like, you've actually broken the collarbone.
Like, so, oh my God, it would have been worse. Oh my God, I'm like freaking out.
Pierced out your skin.
Oh my God, so I'm like thinking about this. Oh my God.
Yeah, it would have been.
Oh my God.
So anyway.
Oh my God, that would have been horrible.
I would literally have been had a protruding bone.
Okay, but anyway, so we're talking about the momentum you got from the Tonight Show.
Yes.
Wait, but what happened?
Well,
you played the gig.
No, well, the only reason I bring this up is because this was the sort of defining moment for me on social media. So basically, I was bedridden for about 8 weeks. And all I could do, essentially, I played one show per week, but I was struggling. Like, I couldn't, it was really just that one gig I wanted to keep. And then I spent the entire time just like studying TikTok. So then I put up this cover with me sitting like this of Neon Moon. Because someone had said to me before.
By Brooks and Dunn. Yeah.
They had said, you have such a great voice for country. And I always kind of laughed at that. And I've always kind of known there was a little hint of country in my influence. I don't really know where it comes. I suppose Scotland, there's a lot of folk and country overlap with that. But anyway, I was messing around with a song, Neon Moon, and my girlfriend heard it and she was like, you gotta put that on TikTok. And I was like, no, it's like, I'm not gonna do that. Anyway, I put it on TikTok. It got like almost 1 million views. And that was the real gate opener of like, oh wow, this is, they really like the country thing. So I leaned into that and I went from like having like 200 followers all the way to like 20,000, maybe roughly that. And only in a matter of like 8 weeks, which for me, I was like, that's quite good growth. So that was the moment I was already building a small fan. Same on Instagram. I'd went from like 2,000 followers. And then by the time I did the Tonight Show, which was about 2 months later, I had about 5,000. And I was like proud. I was like, I'm working hard for that. It's all organic.
Yeah.
None of it's paid. None of it's like bots or whatever. And then, so I felt like I'd built this small little country-ish community. I did the Tonight Show, put an original song up after that. And then that's when it went from like 5,000 followers to like the next day I had 200,000.
Wait, it happened in overnight?
Pretty much, yeah.
You went from 5,000 to 200,000 followers?
Pretty much. Maybe like 185,000. It was like a crazy jump.
Literally in like 24 hours. It was like
maybe 48.
48 hours. Okay, but at that point, who's counting?
Who's counting?
But what was it? Was that Bleed that you put out?
That was Bleed.
That was Bleed that you put out that just went like crazy.
Crazy. I mean,
crazy
I went
viral.
I went from going like, I'll be honest, I had no one on the horizon. I had a small group of friends that always kind of believed in me and you know how it usually goes. But it went from me, I was the guy who was busking in Central Park trying to like, I remember I met this guy, Max Gale, who used to work at RCA. I think he's at Rock Nation now. But I remember I met him, and he'll think this is funny, actually. I remember I said to my girlfriend, because he commented on a video of mine. He was like, I just saw you in Central Park, and you're amazing. And my first thought was like, oh my God, this guy works at RCA. I could get a record deal. Yeah. Holy shit. Like, it was, you know, I was doing the same thing. So I was like, oh my God. Anyway, nothing came from that. He actually wasn't an A&R guy anyway. So he couldn't really have done that much. But I met him once I signed through Sony, and we kind of had a lot of mutual friends. But it was those type of moments that like led to like, oh my goodness, I was the guy trying to get myself in the door. And then I can't remember, say I posted it on the Thursday or whatever. By the Monday, I had bar like three labels. I had every label reach out.
Were you starting to question this path as an artist point? And just like, maybe this isn't for me, or like maybe I'm getting... I mean, you're not that old, but I think like artists tend to think like time's going fast, and it's like, maybe I'm getting too old for this.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I need to get health insurance. Like, yeah,
if I break my other collarbone, I need
to
find something.
Right?
Yeah.
Were you getting close to maybe finding a different path, or like you were never going to do that?
I mean, it's hard. I mean, I feel like the simple answer is yes. I mean, there's been many times in my life. I feel like my life has been like this. It's been a graph. It's been up and down. A lot of down, few ups, and then you kind of plateau, and you kind of, the skill is to not readjust too fast when you get to the peaks, because then you're like, okay, this is great, but what's the next level? You sometimes gotta, for me at least, sit. You have to ride the wave. You can't be looking at the next wave. But I've had a weird career. Like I started in musical theater, actually.
Parents are both, like, your dad's an actor.
Yeah,
Mom's what, like a ballerina?
She was a ballerina. Yeah. So I kind of had a theater background that I never fully indulged in. And I felt like I took a couple of years off from songwriting. And it's just funny because, like, when I came back into music, which is my true love, like, that is the thing that I do think I was put on earth to at least write and sing my own stuff. The sort of transformation for in like a matter of like 2 to 3 years, because I only really got back into music in 2020. So in 3 years, there has been like, it's a whirlwind of things that have happened compared to when I was doing more theater stuff. I just couldn't get in the door. No, people, you would say to me, you're really talented, you've got a great voice, but it was the opposite. They had different values. It was like, you don't sound like anyone else. Where I've never tried to sound, I have influences, but I've never tried to, if I think to myself, well, they've already got a Ronnie Dunn, why would I try and do that? Or if they've got John Mayer, don't try and sound like John Mayer. They've already signed him. He has a fan base.
Yeah,
so, and now that's just my philosophy on it. But so when I came into the music world, the thing that people said were like, we can hear influences, but no one really sounds like you. And I think that was in the beginning scared people, because I think people like to, you know, they like what they know. And I feel like that's a human being thing. It's like we get a little scared of the unknown. But it's like when something happens and it connects, it can completely change people's minds. And they're out, and they go like, oh my God, I've not really heard that before. It's a breath of fresh air. That's a lot of the comments that I was getting, which is really surreal. But yeah, no, I mean, there's definitely times where I majorly thought of giving up. And I think that's, I am living proof where, like, anyone who's listening who goes, I don't think it's going to happen. I had so many days where I woke up, or I went to bed the night before and I'd given up, and then something got me out of bed the next morning, and I just like kept doing it. So I don't know. It's definitely, I truly believe it's like 10% talent, and then the rest is like a mixture of like luck, a little bit of luck, and just like perseverance. I do think it comes down to your temperament and like how badly you want it, you know. And and I'm not saying you could be completely tone deaf, and if you want something, like, I don't think I could, if I was like, I want to be an astronaut, I'm going to do that. Maybe, I think some people do hit limitations, but I think if you've got a decent idea of your skill set and you're true to yourself, like, I always knew I was talented. I always knew that. I know I can sing. I know I can. It's never an arrogance, because it's always just been like, I know I'm not the best at things or whatever, but there is certain things I know I can go in and do my job. Like, you would hope, like, a bus driver knows how to drive a bus. You'd hope they'd be good at it. So I kind of spent a long time honing my craft. So when I go on stage, I go like, I might not be everyone's cup of tea, but I know I can do what you're paying me to do. But that is very different than having, you have to sort of straddle the line of delusion and belief, because when no one else is buying into it, you do think to yourself,
am I delusional?
Yeah.
Well, I think I'm good at this, but how do
then
I
no
know?
One gives you a show.
I could be a Dunning-Kruger. I mean,
Yeah. So you straddle that. But yeah, I mean, it is kind of crazy that I never like to say people, one person said to me in Nashville, oh, you're the TikTok guy. And without being precious about it, I don't think I'm the TikTok guy in the sense that there's like, I know a lot of people who are friends who are like major TikTok people who have never played a show in their life. They're like, you know, very, very young. They've got crazy success. And that's amazing. It's a different path than myself. But TikTok was kind of like, I'd already built the foundation. TikTok was kind of just like the gateway into my world.
Why are you not in Nashville? Like, do you ever think about that? I feel like your creative community and collaborators are in Nashville. But maybe they're in, maybe there's other people in New York too that I'm sure are also brilliant. But I feel like your sound just, I can think of like six people in Nashville that I feel like would be your amazing collaborators.
I mean,
like,
I think the thing is with me, and I love Nashville, I'm going back to work with an amazing producer like next week. So I feel like I sort of straddle this line of like, people always say to me like, what are you? Like, what genre are you? Because I don't claim to be a country guy. I'm not a pop guy. I definitely lean in this Americana roots kind of world. But I think the thing that's, when I met all the Nashville labels, there was a part of me that was like, I don't want to go, I'm already leaning a little country. If I go with a country label, I'm going to be pushed in a direction where it will feel a bit fake to me. So I went with a New York label purely because of David Massey. I met David. And
David always sells it. He's great. It, right?
Yeah.
This is what I hear about everyone who signs to Arista. It's like, we were trying to figure out. And then I had dinner with David Massey and boom, it was game over. Well, that's what everyone said. Why is he so charming? I've never even met the guy.
Well, you know, it's funny. So I'd kind of known his career when he signed. I'm a big fan of Oasis.
Oh, yeah.
So I know he'd signed Oasis. And it was my manager at the time who said to me, you've got a call with Aaron, because it was just like they were stacking up. And then the game changer was, usually, as you know, like when you meet all these labels, it's like A&R, you'll get pushed through to someone else, and then if you're lucky enough, you'll meet the CEO. I had a Zoom with Arista and fucking David Massey's on the first call, and I'm like, is this not the CEO? And my manager at the time was like, this is weird. Like, this is a bit odd. Like, and then he was like, yeah, like, are you in New York? And I was like, yeah. And I realized he was English. And then he was like, yeah, come over to the office. We'll have some tea and hang out. And I was like, okay, cool. I went to the office.
Wait, like same day?
So that was the night before. And he was like, come over at like 3 p.m. the following day.
Yeah.
I went over. I had a gig that night. And I'd spent from 3 to 6:30 just talking, like 3.5 hours, which is a long time. And eventually I was like, David, I gotta go. I said, I've got a show, like a cover gig up in the Upper West Side at Prohibition. And I said, I gotta go. I says, but it's been such a pleasure. Like, you know, I had guitar in
such
hand.
Such a great move. Walking out on, not him saying, like, you're like, look, I got a split. I got big
things.
I gotta go
play some Britney Spears covers to people that
great
don't give
move.
A shit.
Yeah. So, okay.
Well, then he follows up with, now thinking that was me politely excusing myself, he goes, where's it at? And I went, is that a place called Prohibition? And he was like, oh yeah, I know it. We'll come. And I'm like,
oh my God.
Yeah.
That's a great move too.
Well, he invites like half the team. And then, so I'm calling my girlfriend on the cab and I'm going, fuck, this is it. It's blown. Like, cause he's going to come. I've had a great artist conversation.
Yeah.
Then he's going to come to this uncontrolled environment.
Oh, you're like, shit, like he's going to come. And you're thinking like, I'm not going to be good, or like that magic, dust is not going to be there because I'm doing covers.
The biggest thing I thought was he's seeing me write. I truly think people only remember you how they first met you.
Yeah.
The first thing that I didn't want him to see was me playing covers in a bar setting.
You know, people always say like the first impression is so important. I know so many people where they give me a horrible first impression, and then they make it up the second, third, or fourth time, and then I'd be like, I don't even remember the first impression.
I mean, that's fair, but you seem like a, and David's the same, but I feel like a lot of people don't have that emotional intelligence to sometimes see past up. So that's a great quality. And oh. David has that as well, but I didn't know that.
Thank you, Elliot. That really means
a
lot.
It is. That's a very open-mindedness, which I like.
But you were worried that he was going to come see you doing Britney Spears covers.
Correct.
And the whole mirage was going to be blown. The whole thing was going to be,
I thought it was going to be, no thanks, Elliot, we're moving on. You're nothing against cover. I mean, I've made rent for years doing that type of stuff. But when you're dealing with major labels, it's a catch-22. I mean, you got to put in the time doing those type of gigs, but it's not really how you want to be seen as... You know, it's like if you say you're an artist and, you know, you meet someone at like Starbucks and you're trying to convince them, like, I make great coffee, but I also like, I'm an amazing painter. And sometimes they can't differentiate, like, well, you're the Starbucks guy, though. So, it's, you know what I'm saying? So anyway, I'm calling my girlfriend going, well, this is it. It's over. It's blown. So I was like, you got to come, though, to the gig to try and like sweeten them up or whatever. So Jess and my friend Aaron spontaneously come up. So it's Aaron, Jess, my girlfriend, David Massey, Gabby Massey, James, like the whole team are just sitting. So I call, I said to David, how many are going to be there? And he was like, I don't know, maybe 8 or 9. So then I'm calling Prohibition. I'm like, hi, Johnny, it's Elliot. Random question, can I get a table for like 10 people? No, man, I can't do it. We never give tables to the musicians. And I'm like, you know, this is a really strange situation, man. And I literally was on in like 10 minutes. I was like, this is the craziest shit I've ever said. I says, but you got to get a table for 10. I will make it up to you. I'll play a free show, whatever it is. Nah, man, it's not going to work. Like, just leave it. I says, go just Google this guy's name. And he was like, I'm not going to give you the table. I said, just Google it, David Massey. And he was like, okay, give me 1 second. So he comes back. Yeah, we can get a table for 10. We can get that going.
Oh my God, that's what he said?
Yeah.
That did it.
Well,
I'll give you the table.
You got me the table. And thank God he did, because I walked in and it was the busiest I'd ever seen it. Like, it was usually busy, but it was like slam. Now, if you're sitting with like music execs standing at a bar, like that's it's not the vibe. I do the gig. In my mind, I thought, this isn't going to work. So I just like went fucking crazy.
What do you mean it wasn't going to work? Like, you thought there was no way he was going to sign you?
Yeah, I just didn't think so.
You were like, what's the point?
Not based on the music that I was doing. I just thought, this is not where I want to be showcased. Like, you know, so I was throwing in I threw in Bleed and I threw in a couple of originals. I was going for it, and I just thought, this is my... I always said to Jess, my girlfriend, I really hope one day I'm playing in a bar and there's a music exec there, and he comes up to me and he's like, there's a record deal, you know. This is
cliche.
So I thought, this is it. So put your money where your mouth is and just sing your face off in these songs. Anyway, the gig went well. I finished the gig. They were like, come get some food. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Like, and then we're having fries and burgers and all that kind of stuff. And then we're leaving. Gabby's wife is hilarious. Like, her and I, we just click. But then David said to me afterwards, I don't think this room has any idea what they just witnessed. And I went, oh, that's very nice. Thank you. And he says, just completely off the record, you have a record deal. So whenever you want to take it, you just get a lawyer. And he said, I know you're going to Nashville. He says, but what I just saw there, these people have no idea what they just witnessed. And it was pretty sensational. He says, and he says, can I tell you just one thing between us? And I said, he says, do you want to know your best song? And I went, and I'm playing the Beatles. I'm playing, you know, Oasis, Britney Spears. And he goes, all your originals. And I went, oh, fuck off. I was like, it's just objectively not true. He said, I'm not saying they're the best songs ever written, but the way you sing them, there's more heart in those songs than what you do when you sing a Paul McCartney song. I was like, oh, okay. Well, so it's a bit more justifiable. And then that was it. And then so I left that situation. I was just like, what other CEO of a label would come to a cover gig, spend 2 hours and then offer your record deal? So that really made me go, like, out of everyone that I met. So then I went to Nashville And I said to my girlfriend, I said,
If I would have canceled the trip and I would have said,
I mean, I know.
I would have said, let's lawyer up right now before he changes his mind, right?
Well, I knew that he was going to give me a little bit of time. And I thought, I'd booked the flight. I'd paid for the flight, obviously, trying to get down there. So I thought, you know what? I need to go. And it was always an element of like, maybe there'll be something else that'll be a better fit. And everyone was amazing. Like, everyone was so, like, such amazing people that if David wasn't in the picture, that I'd be like, it would be such an honor to be with any of them, seriously. But I just got to the point where I said to my lawyer, I was like, I may have an experience that is just as electrifying, but nothing's going to beat that. I thought, I've got a bird in the hand. David is like, not even just like interested in like catching a wave, but he's just interested in me as an artist, I think. Found a lawyer pretty fast and basically got the deal done. I think what thankfully I'd done, for whatever reason, I don't really know how it worked, but like, because I had kind of built that organic following, I hadn't sort of fallen into some of these trends, I think it had already sort of built such a loyal fan base that, like, I'll be honest with you, and this is crazy because all I ever wanted in my life was a record deal. I got to that point and then I was like, maybe I don't even need one. I was like, maybe I could just do this all independently. Like, yeah. I'm growing at such a rate. I don't regret signing with a label because I feel like that's having the team behind you like that is just ultimately going to, you know, it was just weird being at that point where, I'm not exaggerating, like 2 weeks before that, I was busking in Central Park. You know, and then like even Gabby Massey said, I think I saw you in Central Park.
Central Park, she saw you.
Yeah, I'm like, just, you know, it's just kind of crazy. And then after that, it all kind of went like rapid fire. It was then managers, booking agents. Another thing I always thought about was like, you know, artists think, you know, you just need me and maybe a songwriter or a producer, but it's like there's so much that goes into an artist. It's like you've got the touring agents, you've got the tour manager.
Yeah, there's a whole team.
Which you always kind of think about, but you don't really think about it until you actually are in it and you're like, oh my goodness. So it's, I have a very, very strong team around me now. And yeah, it's just now it's kind of, we've slightly pivoted on certain things. I was going to do the whole thing myself, like DIY, but now we're sort of, I've been fortunate that a lot of producers have come to me, which is allegedly quite rare. But I'm just honored that some of these people are like, we want to get involved.
When you get the advance from the label, what happens? You go out and buy health insurance? Is that the first thing you do?
What? I have health insurance. Yes. Yeah. The first thing that I did buy for myself was a watch.
A good watch, yeah.
Yeah, it was not like a crazy, nothing. It's just a watch that I've always. It is this watch. It's a very old. This watch is from 1961.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not crazy, crazy expensive. I mean, I feel like watch enthusiasts would appreciate a flashy one. People would not appreciate it, but if you're a true watch enthusiast, you might appreciate it.
You know, yeah,
But that was like the thing that. That I kind of bought for myself. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't own a great watch and I feel like I should
own
something, but I want to watch like maybe like this watch, but I'm not really a watch guy, but I want a watch that like a watch enthusiast would be like, would tip their hat to, but maybe isn't like the most expensive watch in the world.
Well, this is an Omega Seamaster DeVille. Again, not crazy, crazy. What I loved about this was this is from 1961. So it's like, I just love the.
Is that your significant or just the fact that it's old?
No, my dad was born in 61, but I just love the fact, I like old things that have been taken care of. Like anyone can go buy a new Omega or a new Rolex or whatever it would be. I like things that have been sort of preserved. Same with like guitars or things like that. And just, I feel like there's this kind of like weird. Like the term vintage is obviously very trendy now, but I feel like for a long time it was almost like, oh, if something's old, discard, where it's just nice to see that if things are taken care of, that this has been on the earth double the amount of time that I've been here and it's now on my wrist. I don't know whose wrists it's been on. It's just, that's just fascinating to me.
Yeah.
And it's never stopped ticking. It's an automatic. So it's just like, just constantly, as long as it doesn't get wet, it'll just keep ticking and ticking. That was like the one nice thing that I just did for myself. I got health insurance and thankfully I haven't had to use it yet, which is great.
That's but you never you know. Want.
That is the point of insurance. It's been a crazy couple of months. The thing that's really hard about what I do is this is the comment that keeps coming up with myself as an artist. I'll release a song and then I'll get all my Instagram and TikTok people being like, this is bullshit. Like, what you do on TikTok is way better. And I'm like, okay. So then I try and digest the comment, not pandering, but I try and listen to the people that are listening to my music. And then I'll go, what do you think of this? It's kind of there, but what you do on TikTok is way better.
What does that even mean? Because aren't you putting the same stuff basically on both platforms?
The only difference is I'm playing live on TikTok. So I'm just, it's like me set up, boom, sing. So we are in the studio, like a traditional pop song, you'll like lay the guitar, lay this up, and then you'll sing over it. I had this guy come up to me. I play this residency up at the Art House Hotel. And really nice guy, but I don't know where he was from. I asked him and he said Brooklyn, but it was not a Brooklyn accent. So I don't know where his origin was from, but definitely English was not the first language. I was the same thing, playing covers, but kind of my own stuff. I still do the gig, actually, just because they've been really good to me. That was the gig that I went to when I brought the call.
Yeah. They owe you forever.
Well,
yeah.
So it's like, good money, but what it is for more than anything, it's just like keeping my hand in, keeping me sharp. Like, because the last thing you want to do is sign a record deal, you stop performing, and then
you get rusty.
Yeah, you got a big gig, and then you choke. So it's more that for me. So, but I was playing this show, it was a couple of weeks ago, and I was playing the thing, and this guy just filmed the entire show, and I was like, definitely odd. And he came up to me afterwards and he was like, hi, I'm a really big fan of your work. And I went, oh, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure. He says, can I tell you something? What you do live is like world class. And I went, oh, wow, thank you so much. And he says, yeah, your recordings are fucking terrible.
Oh my God, that's what he said to you? Yeah. I don't think your recordings are bad.
I appreciate that.
Not at all.
Well, thank you. That's very nice.
What do I know, though? Maybe he's right. Maybe they suck. I don't know.
You know what he said? And then, so a friend of mine who's a musician said, and I said, oh, yeah, I get this a lot on TikTok. People say the same thing. And then she said, to try and break the awkwardness, she goes, well, you're not one of the people, though, that like say that on TikTok, right? And he was like, yeah, no, I'm the guy that says
I'm literally the guy. I'm the guy who's like, putting these bad voices in your head.
Well, yeah. So, but the more I digested the comment, the more I think about it, there's actually, it could have been a bit more eloquent how he said it, but I think there is definitely an element to what he said that is based in truth, because whenever I hit record and it's just me producing my own stuff and I'm singing into a mic and I've got the track behind me, I'm just like in my head too much. It's like I'm thinking about what I just wrote, what I just played, where when I'm just playing here, if you were to set a camera right here and I was to do a TikTok right here, I'm not thinking of anything right now. I'm just thinking like, play the song, get the message across. I'm not thinking of all that. So I think there's just a more honest, raw take that I just can't simulate other than just doing it. So I think what he was getting at was, I think, again, it was a little misguided, but I think it actually came full circle. So to the guy, I can't remember the guy's name, but I basically, I'm going to be working on that and I'll send you the album. You'll be the first one to get it.
Fuck him. But the current single, I Bought a Honda, I think this is a great song. I think it sounds great.
Yeah.
I think it's hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
You know, one of the things I like about it is it does have a little bit of like a country vibe to it.
Yeah.
And I feel like country songs about cars or like about big trucks or about big, and a Honda is like the most normal thing you can buy. And basically this guy goes out of his way to buy a Honda just to remember these memories that he's had with a girl, right? That's what the song is.
That's
hilarious, right?
Yeah.
But it doesn't sound that funny. Like, it's pretty serious. When you're listening to it, like,
it's quite sad.
This guy is heartbroken, right?
Yeah.
Did you write this by yourself or who'd you write this
I did. I have a situation where I come up with a song and then I'll bounce the idea off my girlfriend Jess, who's not.
She's a songwriter.
Well, not by trade, but she's actually a copywriter. So she is a professional writer, I would say, but not strictly in songs. But for example, I usually start with like the first verse and the chorus. So I did the whole thing and I was like, what do you think of this? And she was like, oh my God, that sounds great. I hit a sticking point with the second verse. So then I was like, just live with it if you want and play around with it. And so she wrote the entire second verse.
Wow.
Which is great.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a very sort of unofficial thing, but that's kind of how I've never done any co-writes really before. So that's the closest thing that I feel like most comfortable doing. And she's a great writer. So it kind of came together really fast. I think it sounds great. I worked with this guy called Nick Ruth. That was the first time outsourcing a producer to try and find a different vibe to just me doing it. But yeah, it's always the song that, like, whenever I say the title, especially live, people go like, what is that? Like, they sometimes laugh. And then by the end of the song, they're kind of like, what the fuck was that? Like, it was just it takes on a different meaning. So a lot of my songs are completely made up. So that has no
just
personal
made up stories.
Yeah.
But I feel like you have great titles. Like one of your songs, When I Hear Africa by Toto, that is the name of the song. Hilarious.
You.
But actually a great song. Who sings the feature on that?
That is an artist called Rose Stoller.
Really unique voice.
Amazing voice.
Yeah.
We got connected through, how did Rose and I get connected? I think I literally saw her on Instagram and I shot her a message. This is before, again, this is when I just got back into music.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't have any money, but like, can I pay you like $100? I know that's way less than you should be getting, but like, I don't have any money. Like, could you cut a vocal?
Yeah.
She cut a vocal. It sounded amazing. That story actually is a true story. So it's funny. I was having one of my best friend and I were having this huge fallout, and it was partly my fault actually, the situation. But I hadn't spoke to him in definitely over a month. And his song that he always loved, When I Hear Africa by Toto, Africa by Toto. Sorry, I'm putting my own name into
there. Yeah, right.
Yeah, plug. There's a plug for it. He loved Africa by Toto. And I was in North Carolina, and obviously there was a sort of like estranged thing between us, and we were like, weren't talking. It was like this sort of like bravado, like, I'm not going to make the first move, you know. And then all I kept hearing on the radio was fucking Africa by Toto. So it just sparked this song that every time I would hear it, my first instinct was to like text him or like to look for him. And then I sort of took it in a slightly different direction between like two, you know, lovers per se. But it stemmed from my relationship with my best friend. So yeah, that was a true story. But most of my story, like, I have a song called 33.
Oh, that's like that's a gorgeous song. Heart wrenching.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
But same thing. I always,
you gotta hear that song. If you're listening to this, you gotta check that song out.
I appreciate
What is that about? That's about a friend of yours who really struggled.
It's not even real. It's a made up story. Yeah. So but essentially the narrative is it's about someone who is either in a relationship or however you want to take it with someone who is like died from an addiction.
What's the hook in that song? If she loved me as half as much as
if she loved herself half as much as she loved me, today she'd be 33. Yeah, that song has really hit a chord in some people, and I remember talking to David, and I actually said this in an interview I did recently, because he called me up and he was like, this is before I'd signed. I'd written that song in 20 minutes, which is crazy because sometimes it takes me 20 days to write a verse. I wrote it in like 20, 30 minutes, and then I sent it to him, and then he called me and was like, what is this song? Like, this is much better than Bleed and all that. I was like, wow, that's really sweet. Anyway, I had a long chat with him, and he was like, what is the story with that, if you don't mind me asking? And I was at this crossroads where I was like, do I just... I like to be honest, but I was like,
should I just make up a story?
Yeah.
Should I just say, oh my God, my friend back died home. This whole thing, who would know? Nobody's going to know.
But I said to him, I was like, it actually was completely made up, but do you think I should, should I maybe not say that in interviews? And he was like, no. He was like, because I was like, do you think people will think that's phony? And he kind of really gave me a great piece of advice. He was like, a lot of writers just write what they know, which is great. And that's, I've done that. I probably will do that again. But I feel like there's a certain time where you like hit a ceiling. If this is your sphere and this is all you know, you get to the point where you kind of go like, well, I've kind of written about everything I've done in the last year. I don't know where to go now. What I try and do is I try and like put myself into other people's shoes, which is not the most original thing. People like Bruce Springsteen and all that have done it, but just come up with these. I try and see myself more as just like a story, a teller of stories, rather than like, oh, this is like something that is so close to me. So I think what's good about what I do is a lot of my music is really depressing, and people go like, is it really hard for you to get on stage and sing these songs? I'll be completely honest with you, no. I enjoy it, because it's not like I'm up there going, wow, this is a real experience that I'm going through. Again, there's certain things that I've pulled from. But I think if I had went through someone, if my ex or whoever it was had died of an overdose, I don't think I would enjoy singing that every night on stage.
Yeah.
Where that is the,
it's
I
too
think,
personal.
Yeah, it's a bit too personal. And you'd really have to sort of separate that, where the good thing selfishly for myself is, and I suppose selflessly for the listener, is there is no connection for myself. That song is really for everyone that's struggled with that personally. So I'm really thankful that I haven't. But I've had a lot of messages on a lot of songs, but especially that song being like, that has really changed or really helped me. So it's crazy. So I'm being less ashamed of not having personal connections. And I'm just sort of I just see myself as like a novelist to songs.
Yeah, I was going through the catalog too. You have the song New Orleans that I was listening to. And I was like, this has got to be like some old blues song that he decided to cover. Because it sounds like that. I was like, this has got to be like a wrote this and sang it like 100 years ago.
No.
But like you just wrote, you were like a solo writer on it.
Yeah.
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 Fun, really fun song.
I appreciate that. I like that's that a song that is Barry. It's funny you reference that. That was a long time ago. And I think that was the first song really back into my music career. So there's things that I feel like I've evolved, but that's a song that was the first song that I just sat and was like, how would Johnny Cash write a song like this? Or how would these type of people, because I'm not running around shooting people with guns.
Not yet, hopefully there's still time.
So it's kind of, I have a definitely an interest in relationship with songs, but I just love, like, I wrote a song today that I really, really feel strongly about, and whenever you write, or whenever I write a song that I go like, wow, that was, I always go like, how the hell did that happen? I would be great to say like, oh yeah, I sit down at my study and I light a candle and I get in the zone and it's all just flowing, and that would be great, and there may be some people that can do that, but I do think it sparks from something. You see something, you read something, and then I have a window where if I don't act on that situation and I go, I'll go get a coffee and I'll come back, I will never write the song or I'll never finish the song.
Yeah.
So today, I was running late because I was literally like, okay, I've got this part and I've got this part. And then I was like, fuck, I need to go for a shower. I need to go there. And then, but I was like, if I break this like trance,
you're never going to come back.
I managed to make it all work. But it's such a great feeling to go like, wow, this is a cool song. Even if it does nothing, it makes you go like, okay, there's something that's been creatively, put out, which is cool. But
I love it, man. Elliot Greer in the studio this week. Man, thanks for coming by.
Pleasure.
I Bought a Honda. That's the current single.
I Bought a Honda.
You got to listen to the song. It's funny, but it's like heartfelt.
I appreciate that.
It's like going to make you sort of laugh, but you're going to go, wait, this is like pretty serious at the same time.
Yeah,
it's like pulling these different things. And dude, your first headlining show is what, in a couple weeks in Denver? Where are you playing?
The Globe Hall.
The Globe Hall in Denver.
In Denver, Colorado. On...
Why? Did someone like reach out and book you? Or what's...
Well, I'm going there for a AAA... the AAA radio conference.
Oh, yeah, right.
And then we just thought, well, while I'm there, I feel like a lot of my demographic of listeners are going to be, well, just from like the stats that my management pulled, they were like, you've got a lot of listeners in Denver, let's do a show. So I'm doing, I think I'm doing the radio conference that morning and then going straight to the show. So it's a very fast turnaround, but please come along, buy tickets.
Where are you just going to play solo? Or
that's
all you need.
Just, yeah.
You and a guitar.
And the truth. And or the truth. Actually, the, that's not it. The truth, because it's not my
bullshit.
Truth.
Just fake. Just nothing.
I love that when people say, yeah, three chords and the truth. Well, it's like four and five-ish chords and bullshit.
People always throw in six minors everywhere. four or five with a six minor.
Yeah.
It's really four chords.
That might be the next one.
Is ever four chords and bullshit. Yeah.
That should be the album. Just four chords and bullshit.
I would listen to that album. The title pulls you in.
Like Liquid Death.
Elliot Greer, he's playing in New York you're in New York all the time playing, right?
I only play Art House Hotel on Saturday. It's been a little tricky with my schedule right now, to be honest with you, just because it's starting to pick up a little bit. But I'm playing this Saturday, the whatever date that is. But yeah, if you ever want to come along and just hear some originals and covers, just let me know.
Elliot Greer, have we left anything out? What's been unsaid? Now's your chance. What we've got the publicist in the corner thinking about what's been unsaid here.
I don't think anything, right?
We've touched it all. We've said it all. It's all been said.
No stone
has been unturned. We're wrapping it up. Elliot Greer in the podcast studio. Melrose. I think if I keep shouting out Melrose Podcast Studio, maybe they'll give me a discount.
Sure.
We're working on it. This is my second shout out for Melrose Podcast.
Melrose, come on.
This place is great. Air conditioning, great cameras.
Maybe I can write a song. Staff. Maybe I can write a song.
Write a song. The Melrose Podcast Studio. You got to use this place. Yeah. Oh my God. All right. We're done. Wrap it up. We're done. Oh my God.